All right, and welcome to another rendition of the Streak of the Lawn podcast. My name is Pierce. Thanks for tuning in. I've got with me a couple of my fellow Streak of the Lawners here. Brian, say hello.
Hey, guys.
All right, and I've got Danny.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
All right, good to hear. And we've got a very, very special guest with us tonight, Mr. Ken Pomeroy. Ken, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule. How are you doing this evening?
Oh, I'm doing excellent. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, we are looking forward to it as well. For those listening at home, you can find Ken on the Twitter. He's famous for his pace rankings, I would say, or rankings that explain basketball on a possession-by-possession level is the best way I saw it surmised. Would you say that's fair, Ken, in terms of what your tempo-free statistics put out there?
Yeah, I think that's a phrase that John Gassaway, who now writes for ESPN.com, has a trademark on, but that's the most accurate way to describe them, tempo-free. Take the style
nice,
out of it.
Just, nice. You know. Well, I'm all about using copyrighted phrases that I didn't come up with, so we'll go ahead and keep with that. We're excited, obviously, in the possession-by-possession look at teams. I think that certainly favors the style of play that the UVA puts out there, and a lot of times, particularly, I think, between the start of Tony Bennett's start at UVA and maybe before the championships were won, there was a lot of what we like to call pacism, maybe looking down on Virginia's program for not playing as fast as some of the other top programs. And your rankings have always looked favorably upon the Virginia team. And certainly that is continued this year. We've got in your preseason ratings, Virginia's right at number 3, right, in the country. Which is certainly exciting for us, and certainly we all have high expectations. I want to, you know, just in general, maybe we should start off talking a little bit about UVA's upcoming season. What are your thoughts on Virginia coming off, you know, a second straight regular season ACC title, but again, a second straight year of losing to Michigan State earlier in the NCAA tournament than we would have liked? Do you see UVA as being another contender for a number 1 seed or number 2 seed and obviously that ACC title again?
Yeah, they should be in the mix, certainly for the ACC championship again and in a number 1 seed. Both of those things are a lot more difficult to get than maybe UVA has made it look the last couple of years. So, bear that in mind, I guess.
Sure.
I mean, the team certainly, I think, talent-wise on, you know, a similar level with those previous two teams, maybe a slight notch below, but the top of college basketball is a slight notch below what it's been the past couple of years as well. So, mm-hmm. You'd certainly think just based on that they'd have a pretty good shot at, they'll definitely be contending for an ACC title, whether they win or not. Duke and North Carolina are going to have a lot to say about that.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think a lot of the top teams looking at preseason rankings, whether it be yours or the AP poll coming out and such, that there's a lot of unknown in those top teams. Duke at number 1. Well, you've got Matt Jones and what's the other, Emile Jefferson. It's the star players. You're not sure who's going to step up again as a freshman, whether that be for the Kentuckys or Duke or even Villanova, Arizona, those other top guys. I think UNC we see a lot in the AP poll that came out today. Because they've got the senior leader in Marcus Page, but even they'll be relying on freshman team. Do you think that there's a lot of uncertainty in that? Do you have any issues with, you know, naming freshmen to a preseason All-American or All-Conference team? Or how much weight can you put on somebody who hasn't played a college game before?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's difficult. I mean, I don't have any, like, philosophical objections to, naming players, you know, freshmen to all conference or even, you know, national all American teams. But in general, you know, once you get past the top 5 or so freshmen, like it really becomes difficult to project how other freshmen are going to play. Certainly over a 1 year span. I mean, for the most part, you know, your top 20 or 30 recruits, they will be successes over the course of their college career, however long that lasts. But whether, you know, the, Diamond Stone is a good example from Maryland, you know, whether he can come in and, you know, make an immediate impact. I mean, he's going to be have a great NBA career and make himself a lot of money at some point.
yeah.
But will he dominate in his freshman year in college? That's, a different question altogether and not one that's very easy to answer.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
We talk about unknowns this season. One of the unknowns is the rule change that we have the new 30-second shot clock. And I know you looked at that in the NIT, which was where they used the 30-second clock last year, and you found that scoring was up, as we expect, and efficiency was actually, I guess it was up a small amount during the NIT, but it was more inconclusive than anything. Do you have any, intuition for how that will manifest itself this season, and also whether some teams will benefit from that more than others?
Yeah, that last question is really the one that if somebody knows the answer, could look really smart. I haven't done any more investigation than I did, you know, with the data that we had at the end of last season. I mean, that's about all you can do with that. I did expect tempo to go up a little bit this season. I expect scoring to go up a little bit. You know, every once in a while I talk to someone and I hear, you know, like, then tell me about like a coach here, a coach there that actually, you know, thinks that scoring will go down this season. And it's almost like an urban legend. You know, you kind of want to know like who said that. And they'll be like, well, you know, my uncle knows like this athletic director in this conference. And I don't know who said it, but you can never figure out who's saying these things, but I would be willing to make a, you know, decent wager with any coach out there that scoring will in fact go up this season. In fact, scoring probably would have gone up anyway, because it was at an all-time low, basically. So, you know, when things are at all-time lows, they tend to regress to the long-term trend.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I kind of see that UVA would be beneficial for that, considering all the shot clock violations they would be getting already with the 35-second, now even lower. I can see them benefiting a lot from that.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, it does cut both ways. So you would think, okay, you know, these teams like UVA that play pack line or teams that play zone, you know, they do tend to force longer opponent possessions, and they're going to be, you know, forcing teams to take more shots late in the shot clock. But, you know, the issue with UVA as well is that their offense takes a long time too. I mean, and in fact, relative to the national average, their offense was actually slower than their defense was last year. So, you know, they'll have to make some adjustments offensively to avoid, you know, having that issue themselves of playing possessions late in the shot clock and, you know, endangering their offensive efficiency that way.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at your rankings right now, I see that you have Virginia as number one on the defensive part. Is that looking at both of an adjusted offense and adjusted defense, which do you think is like the better indicator of success? Because if you look last year on your 2015, like a couple of the top teams, like the Final Four teams, were in the adjusted offense, but only like Kentucky was adjusted defense.
Yeah, you know, I tend to not necessarily favor either one, although, you know, some of the work I did in the offseason about figuring out kind of who is more in control of the game, offense or defense, you know, that's kind of swayed me to thinking that, you know, it's a little bit more favorable to be better offensively than defensively. If you had to pick one, obviously, you know, the idea is to be very good on both ends. But if you're going to have an imbalance, I think teams that are better or stronger offensively stand to have a slightly more success than teams that are better defensively.
Hmm.
The idea there, I guess, is that if you're strong in offense, you have a better control of that, and if you're strong in defense, there's a little more luck that works in, or you're susceptible to that changing against a better offense. Is that the idea?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is that defensively you're just kind of susceptible to whether the shot goes in or not. And even if you're forcing tough shots, sometimes the ball just goes in. And so, you know, when you're playing the guarantee games in November and December, the tough shots aren't going to go in because those teams aren't capable of making easy shots sometimes. But, you know, when you're in conference play, when you're playing teams that are roughly on your level, you know, even if you're one of the top five teams in the country, if you're playing a top 25 team, you know, they have guys. They all have guys that can make shots for the most part. And even if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing defensively, you know, if you can't take the ball away from them, they're getting shots off. Some nights those shots are going to go in. And so I think that is explains at least part of the reason that the offense is in slightly more control of the situation.
I noticed that you wrote like a long series the past month or so about, you analyze each stat, like steals, blocks, rebounds. Which one do you think was like the one that popped the most? We thought was like the most important. Like, whoa, look at that. That's why all those teams won.
Yeah, it was an excruciatingly long series. But it was for me, it was like really, it was really fascinating to kind of look at all the stats and figure out, you know, what the offense had control of, and also just like what was more susceptible to luck. Random variance, I guess. We want to avoid the L word. the interesting thing to me, so there were a lot of things, like the most important thing by far, like that, you know, both sides kind of had influence on, and there was less random variance involved with shot selection. So, you know, how many threes a team takes in a particular game is more predictable than really any other stat. If you know, you know, the offensive and defensive tendencies of each team, you can get a pretty accurate forecast of that. But shooting percentages are actually among the least predictable, which I found pretty interesting. You know, we kind of already knew that with three-point percentage, but this just kind of hammered that home. I mean, free throw percentage is another one that is really interesting. Like, certainly there are teams that have more skill at making free throws than others, but in an individual game, you know, even the best teams are going to have some pretty bad games, you know, two or three bad games a year with free throw shooting. And you know, to me, I always like this, it's always about to me kind of looking at the process. You know, if you want to find out if a team's really playing well, you can't, you have to get kind of beyond wins and losses and look at, hey, you know, is the process good? And the process is about, you know, forcing tough shots and you know, offensively, like for instance, free throw shooting, you know, it's really about getting to the free throw line more so than actually making your free throws. So kind of rambling there, but those are some of the things that I learned. It was a fun project.
All about the process. I mean, it sounds straight out of every post-game Tony Bennett conference I've heard. You know, when he gets asked, he's always saying, you know, if you're doing the things right, hopefully that leads to a win. But if it doesn't, if it still leads to a loss, but the process is there, then that means you're on the right path. And it's certainly something we heard, especially when the talent wasn't there and the wins were coming, but maybe not, you know, as often as fans would like. I thought it was interesting about adding the series, analyzing the different types of stats. Is there something that frustrates you still about the system of analysis? Something that, you know, like impacts the game that can't, you know, be measured analytically, like even steals or field goal percentage or free throw amounts and such?
I don't know. I mean, you know, when I started doing this, there was less, you know, a lot less data than there is now. So I'm sort of thankful for whatever we have. I mean, certainly like looking at shot selection is, you know, about all we can do is look at twos and threes. I mean, you can dig into play by play and get some idea on, you know, layups and non-layups, but that's like skewed by, you know, depending on who's doing the tabulations on what a layup is and what it isn't, you know, that can really be skewed from arena to arena. So, you know, having better information, I mean, you can see what's going on at the NBA with the sport view data and, you know, what they can do in terms of looking at potential assists and, you know, exactly where teams are shooting from and which shots are challenged. I mean, we just don't have that information, at least on a comprehensive basis, for every team. There's obviously, you know, people on each team that are charting that stuff, but you know, that's going to be the next frontier, and I doubt we'll ever get there for all 351 teams just because of the money issue.
Well, yeah, that makes sense.
You know, something I've we know that basketball, college basketball teams, NBA teams are using analytics more and more. But as a UVA fan, I've always wondered kind of how much does the UVA coaching staff use these tools? And in general, I was wondering, do you think there's like a pretty large imbalance right now among college basketball teams in terms of who's really focused on analytics and who's ignoring it? And do you think that's having a – I guess, first of all, do you think that there is a large imbalance? And second of all, do you think that that's having impact, starting to have an impact on what we see on the court?
Yeah, so I mean, undoubtedly, there's a large imbalance. I mean, you know, there are high-profile programs that are heavily invested into analytics. You know, the trick is always to kind of use analytics properly. but I think there's a lot of teams out there that are doing a pretty good job of it. You know, they're heavily invested in it. They understand the limitations, and they're using it to make better decisions, you know, on a day-to-day basis, whether it's with the practice plan or strategy in games or who to get playing time to or whatever. And then there are other programs that, for the most part, are ignoring it. You know, they'd probably tell you that they use it, but they really don't know exactly what they're doing. They don't have an expert on their staff. And so they, you know, really struggle to kind of take advantage of the information. Hmm. What that means in terms of like what we're seeing on the court is a impossible to answer question, I think. I mean, it's kind of the great irony of analytics is that you really can't measure what kind of difference it's making, you know, in a program. Obviously, it's not going to turn, you know, a 10-win team into a 20-win team, at least not in terms of their play on the court. It might, you know, if you use analytics and recruiting, it could possibly make a decent difference. But, you know, on a day-to-day basis during the season, I mean, maybe it makes a difference in a game or two over the course of the season. Obviously, you know, that can be a huge deal. It can mean the difference between a one or a two seed or getting in a tournament or not. But I think that is the best way to answer that, is that it is making a difference, but the quantity of difference is undeterminable.
Right, and it's hard. I guess it's not really a question, but it confirms to me that it's hard. You know, when you watch the games, it's hard to, I guess, identify. Oh, they did this. That means they really focused on the analytics. It's just there's not a really tangible thing you could see. It's just, I guess, it goes on in the background is the idea.
Yeah, and
being searched for that kind of those kind of actions.
Right. The thing is, I mean, really what it comes down to is your players. You know, do you have good players or not? And the level of your talent, the difference in talent between teams is often going to dwarf, you know, whatever you can make up through analytics. But, you know, certainly you can watch a game, and if teams are, you know, taking a lot of, you know, 16-foot jumpers early in the shot clock, you probably know that they're not too analytically focused. But beyond that, you know, you kind of have to read between the lines of what coaches are saying in their press conferences. And sometimes you can tell that, yeah, this coach is not – he's not bought into some of the modern, you know, tenets of analytics. And sometimes you can tell that this guy gets it, and he's like, you know, his kind of philosophy is governed by a lot of things, you know, his own experiences, but it's also – he's also influenced by some of the more advanced work that's being done in analytics.
So going back to that discussion about the changing the shot clock, what other stuff do you think the college basketball should change? Because there's all the commentators are last year like, oh, it's broken, needs fixing. And so it seems like the NCAA made the reaction to lower the shot clock and lessen the amount of timeouts. Is there anything you see out there that could improve the game if it needs improving?
Yeah, I mean, the timeouts were the big thing. You know, just the way the end of the game is played and the stoppages. If you're following a team that's winning the ACC title, you're probably not bothered by a bunch of stoppages at the end of the game because you're really super invested in the game. You know, I was just to give you an anecdote here about the slow play. You know, I'm all for, like, you know, diversity of style in the college game, and that's what makes it great. But there's a limit to the excitement level. And if you're following a team that plays slow, you're not going to care. Like, they're winning. That's what you're there for. I mean, you know, last year I was at the Mountain West tournament, and the championship game, the final score was 45-43. Mm-hmm. That was a super exciting game. I mean, the crowd was into it. It was a fun game. There was a tournament berth on the line for one of the teams, and you know, it was a thrilling game. But if you had no interest in that game, if you were a casual fan watching on TV, I could see where it would have been pretty difficult to stick with it. So, so the game's not necessarily, you know, I'm not saying the game's broken, but it could improve. And I think ultimately, I think the way the game's going to evolve is just going to evolve towards FIBA rules. You know, I think the next step is to move the 3-point line out a little bit. I think, you know, the offense would adjust fine. That's another kind of offshoot of what I learned in the offseason was, you know, the offense would probably adjust fine. 3-point attempts continue to rise. And, you know, if we move the line out, 3-point attempts might decrease for a year or two, but then they start to go back up. And you just have more space in the court. Shooters would have more range. And it would be a more interesting game with less contact. So I think that's that's the direction we're heading, but I don't have any, like, you know, quirky rules that I like to see, other than I wouldn't mind seeing, like, timeouts drastically reduced. You know, if you just had, like, one or two timeouts a game, I think it'd be awesome. Because what I want to see, I want to see, like, coaches going up set plays. I want to see players, like, thinking on their own.
Yeah.
Making mistakes or whatever, using their athleticism to, you know, do the great things that we do, or that they do, that we like to see. So that would be my only crazy rules change. But
right,
I'd be helpful.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good, Schwartz. If you,
I just seem that basketball is kind of unique in that if a player is in trouble, he could suddenly call timeout, and you don't see that in other sports. And it doesn't seem like it's a like it's something that's exciting to see. So I definitely agree with you there. We talk about changes about, I guess that's what you'd want to change about the state of college basketball in general. What would you change? I know you go back and forth sometimes with some other media personalities, I'll even unnamed. If you could change or eliminate one aspect of kind of common media discourse that kind of eats at you from an advanced analytics perspective, what would it be?
I would probably be realistic about it. I would just love for us to get away from using field goal percentage. You know, three-pointers are made at a 34% clip, and two-pointers are made at a 48% clip. And depending on the type of player you are, you know, your field goal percentage, you know, field goal percentage of 40 for a guy who, you know, takes most of his shots from three-point range is acceptable. If you're, you know, a post player, a field goal percentage of 40 is horrible. And ditto for teams, you know, really, mm-hmm. like teams that shoot a lot of threes, the standard for what their field goal percentage should be is different than a team that's not shooting many threes. And why we still use field goal percentage, I mean, I just don't think that's a hard change. Anybody can understand two-point percentage and three-point percentage. I think just about everybody has a good feel for what a good three-point percentage is. You know, maybe there's some limited amount of education that is necessary to enlighten people on what kind of the range of two-point percentage is, but I just don't see that as being like a major step that, you know, any broadcast network could add to their coverage, and, you know, any reputable reporter out there could use in their writing as well.
Right. And I know we use like effective field goal percentage, which should capture them both, but I agree. Even just giving two numbers, 2-point percentage and 3-point percentage, it seems like that's something that's easy to understand and would definitely make more sense to give both. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and obviously, if you know, I endorse effective field goal percentage as well. That, you know, might require a tiny bit more education than just 2-point percentage, but I mean, that, you know, that probably wouldn't be all that difficult to implement to a mass audience either.
And for those listening at home who are UVA fans, they might not know that Ken, you're a Hokie, and. Not that we're holding that against you, but I'm a little bit curious how a Hokie gets into the college basketball stats game. not that we've got a great basketball tradition really to build on, but down in Blacksburg, it seems to be all football all the time. Have you any thoughts of tying that bridge together? You know, how that worked out?
There was a time when Virginia Tech had some decent basketball teams, and actually the Seth Greenberg era was not all that bad.
True, very true.
It had some moments. I mean, obviously, UVA has an advantage in terms of facilities and, you know, tradition as well. I will say, just to extend the olive branch, growing up, I actually was a big UVA fan. I could probably hold my own in terms of, 1988 to 1992 UVA basketball.
All right.
Era, but
yeah. No, that was the golden era, at least. And as long as I've been alive, that was the golden era. Until maybe the current era for sure. You know, speaking, I think an interesting way to look at, you know, the advanced stats in basketball is how it would tie into other sports. Obviously, you know, with Moneyball and the whole baseball culture of advanced stats, but you don't see a lot of it in football, really. And do you have you ever considered, or do you even just think that the way you look at stats for basketball could be applied to a football version?
Yeah, I mean, it's It's so. First of all, oddly enough, I'm not a huge football fan, despite my where I got my degree from. I think it makes more sense to be a football fan than a basketball fan. But you know, I just like basketball better. But you know, I'm a casual football fan, and I've been tempted, you know, year after year to jump into football. It's just basketball takes so much work. I know football will take a ton of work as well, but there's like still amazingly to me, you know, we're in 2015 and there's people out there doing good work in the advanced stats area, but there's really a huge opportunity for someone to really just kind of dive in and go nuts with it and kind of, you know, set up something on the web that's pretty organized and allows people to get some information that, you know, you just don't hear on broadcast. I mean, to me, you know, again, just fairly casual football fan, but it seems to me like the intelligence level of football commentators on TV is far inferior to basketball commentators. You know, like there's some guys that I watch on basketball that I don't like, but for the most part, like there's a lot of people I think that take risks and put some good information out there that people might not be familiar with, and they kind of stay up on the latest analytics. But in football, I mean, geez, like those guys, they're still living in the Stone Ages, you know? It's like,
yeah, I think
you know, they want the coach to take a risk, and they're citing these stats, you know, that just really don't identify the things that they think they're identifying. And so every time I hear something like that, I think, you know, wow, I really should like do something about this.
Well, I think it'd be hard to throw out, you know, he's got a really high motor as a stat over and over again. But maybe we'll find a way to track that.
I know we're all, you know, KenPom subscribers, devotees. For those listening, it's, you know, everyone agrees that it's for $20 for the year, you basically to look like a genius from just looking at from just going to the website. I know we noticed some changes for this season. You broke down the team schedules into kind of different groups to kind of better understand, I think, help maybe a way to better understand strength of schedule. Do you have any, where do you see the site going in the future? Is there any kind of big areas that you're hoping to dive into or any other teases you could give us about what we could expect going forward? Or is that top secret information?
There's a little part of me that makes it top secret because I'm afraid somebody, you know, one of your very intelligent listeners, well-versed in computer programming will hear my idea and they'll implement it before I get a chance to. But mainly I struggle to answer this because I don't exactly, I'm bad at making plans. You know, most of my ideas just happen either because I hear something and I want to, you know, investigate it further and make it easy to investigate. So I'll just, you know, start writing the code for that. Or I'm just messing around doing random stuff and I'm like, oh man, it'd actually be pretty easy to add this to the site and this would be a cool thing to look at. So I do have some ideas. I mean, one of the things that people have bugged me about for a long time and I'm hoping to add this year, although I make no promises, but is TV information to the fan match page. Hoping to do something with that. I'd like to get kind of like a tempo free, like historical record book, I guess you could say, for each team, you know, what their best, most efficient offensive games were, least efficient, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So those are a couple ideas. I got a few more things rolling around in my head, but I think those are the two that are probably the most likely to be added during the season.
Nice.
Are there any thoughts on putting like a weekly ranking? Because, you know, doing research, you know, last year when Justin Anderson got injured, I was going to look up and like, oh, we were doing so well. And then you got injured, we're doing this, and I couldn't find anywhere because you obviously do it week by week. You know, that'd be something cool to look at.
Yeah.
That
is definitely something I'd like to add as well. I get a lot of requests for that. It's a matter of, you know, like the data ends up multiplying, you know, from, you know, one data file per year to, 100 times that for each day of the season. So that's like, the holdup is kind of managing that. But that's definitely something that I like to add as well.
Looking at your rankings right now, I noticed a particular school at number 24. It makes sense here. You'd be really happy to have Maryland so low compared to the AP and other polls that have in like top three or top four.
Yeah. I mean, they're obviously with respect to the, analytics side of the house, they're one of the more interesting teams. I mean, I'm really curious to see how things will unfold with them. As I'm sure you know, the audience may not know, but you know, my preseason ratings don't account for transfers directly. So they have a couple of potentially high impact transfers. Certainly Robert Carter from Georgia Tech, mm-hmm. and Rashid Suleiman from Duke, the other, although it's interesting that people consider him a high impact transfer considering, you know, he basically turned around their season after he left. But yeah, you know, it reminds me a little bit of like the NC State situation, I think from 3 years ago, where they brought back a bunch of guys that were, you know, considered potential NBA prospects, and they were ranked like sixth, I believe, preseason, and they were kind of like borderline top 30, I think, in my ratings. Mm-hmm. Kind of embarrassingly low. It might have been like, it might have been right around 24, actually, kind of around 25. But anyway, you know, I had the same feelings then. I was like, I mean, I really admire the AP poll, as I've written, you know, the preseason AP poll. There's a lot, I think, of merit to it, and it has some value. And so I certainly respect their opinion. And I don't, I'm not necessarily going to endorse that. I really think Maryland's the 24th best team in the country, since a bunch of other smart people feel strongly otherwise. But I will be like that a year or 3 years ago, and I basically was like kind of obsessed with NC State basketball the first few weeks in the season and seeing how good or not good they were. As it turned out, they weren't that good, but I'll be really obsessed with the Terps early in the season this year.
Yeah, that was a pretty good nuanced answer, but we're not – the court, you know, a lot of the Maryland blogs were really up in arms with that ranking, and we were hoping that this would be your opportunity to really say that you have a personal hatred toward Maryland. And that was the reason.
Yeah, it is funny. I mean, I think Maryland has a very enthusiastic fan base, as does Virginia. I mean, if I did the same thing to Virginia this season, I'm sure not every fan would have sent a reasonable tweet to me about
it. We would not like it.
Yeah. So, you know, same way. I mean, there are a few reasonable ones out there, and I think only the totally clueless ones don't realize that, you know, I'm not here, you know, to screw with Maryland, and I don't actually control how good Maryland's going to be this year. Like, if they play well, they'll, you know, be properly rewarded by other people besides me, certainly.
But they'll want their vindication for sure.
There will be a few.
I think, and you've got on the podcast tonight with us some of the least reasonable UVA fans around. I mean, I'm sure we would fall in the same boat. But I think that probably about wraps us up. I mean, I don't want to get too much into prognostication. I mean, you can read the rankings for Ken Pom at kenpom.com, and you can find Ken on Twitter at Ken Pomeroy. And you know, I mean, we can't say enough how valuable we find it, for sure, and especially because you hate Maryland so much, and that's the most entertaining possible for us. But I guess I'll go ahead and say, Ken, thanks again so much for joining us tonight, and we appreciate you taking the time. And for Danny and Brian and I'm Pierce, and for all the Streaking Along crew, thanks for tuning in, everybody, and we'll be back sooner than later to see if we can follow up with the season, see if Virginia holds up to its preseason number 3 ranking in the KenPom rankings, and number 6 in the AP poll this week. But we'll check in back soon, and until then, go Hoos!